I'm starting to focus.
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink. This is the last and final segment of our October 10th, 2010 Day of Prayer and Fasting, where we have discussed the Christian foundation of the United States of America, its Christian institution, and its Christian founders for the last 10 hours so far. And here I am with Eli James, Pastors Eli James and Ben Johns and Sword Brethren to wrap this discussion up. And we're going to discuss the, to some extent, the Black Robe regiments of the Revolutionary War, and they were actually the pastors who inspired the people to stand up for their rights against tyranny and the Christian colonization of the various colonies, 13 colonies of the original United States. Hello.
Yes. Hello. Hello.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. And it goes without saying that none of these pastors were antinomians. Right?
Well, absolutely not. And I had read some material that I read in the prior segments of today, and you did too, what fully showed that the founders of this nation, that they had accepted both the Old and New Testaments and demanded an acceptance and a respect for both testaments of our Bibles
as
the inspired word of Yahweh, of our God, and not just the New Testaments, like these wishy-washy Judeo-Christian pastors do today.
Right. And not only that, they were white separatists.
Well, yes, and it's been demonstrated that Benjamin Franklin and John Adams were absolutely white separatists and wanted to populate this entire colony with European Saxons.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I figure since that's the title of today's program, and I know we have miscommunication sending emails that had more material, but I was planning on quoting from this article by Chuck Baldwin, which is about the Black Regiment, or the Black Robe Regiment, you know, as it's been variously called. And this is from his article on the subject, and he says, how many of us are aware of the extent to which faith motivated those farmers of the American Revolution in colonial America, to leave their families and homes and risk their lives for a cause that most would have considered hopeless at that time? And it was considered hopeless at that time. How many are aware of the extent to which preachers actively participated in our war for independence, and not just rhetorically from the pulpit, though the great sermons on behalf of the freedom fight provoked many parishioners to action? How many are familiar with the phrase Black Regiment? That phrase encapsulates what colonial America possessed in its war for independence that is sadly lacking today. And I think we're in full agreement with that statement. The Black Regiment is a moniker that was given to the patriot preachers of colonial America. They were called the Black Regiment owing to the fact that so many of them had a propensity to wear long black robes in the pulpit. According to historian educator Reverend Wayne Sedlak in his article, The Black Regiment Led the Fight in Our War for Independence, quote, it was British sympathizer Peter Oliver who actually first used the name Black Regiment. He complained that such clergymen were invariably at the heart of the revolutionary disturbances. He tied their influence to such colonial leaders as Samuel Adams, James Otis, and others of prominence in the cause. He quotes colonial leadership in its quest to gain the voice of the clergy. In one instance, he disparagingly cites a public plea of James Otis, who sought the help of the clergy in a particular manner. Quoting again, Mr. Otis, understanding the foibles of human nature, advanced one shrewd position which seldom fails to promote popular commotions, that it was necessary to secure the Black Regiment. These were his words, and his meaning was to engage in ye dissenting clergy on his side. Where better could he fly for aid than to the horns of the altar? This order of men, like their predecessors in 1641, okay, left the Anglican Church for America, right, have been unceasingly sounding the yell of rebellion in the ears of an ignorant and deluded people. Such are the words of this British sympathizer, right? So influential were the patriot pulpits of colonial America that it was said by Prime Minister Horace Walpole of the British Parliament, quote, cousin America has run off with a Presbyterian parson, unquote. In fact, America's war for independence was often referenced in Parliament as the Presbyterian Revolt. And during the Revolutionary War, British troops often made colonial churches military targets. Churches were torched, ransacked, and pillaged. Okay? So it's quite obvious that without the Christian pulpit, the American Revolution would have sincerely been lacking the knowledge of the scriptures and the belief that America was a nation founded by God here on the shores of the Atlantic Ocean. Okay.
Well, there's no doubt. Thomas Paine, as I explained this afternoon, John Hancock, when he gave his speech at the funeral for the people who were killed in the Boston Massacre, that was printed in various newspapers around the country, but it was also read in the churches.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Paine, when he published Common Sense, he had actually formulated all of his arguments for independence from Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And it was read throughout the church. Over half a million copies were printed, but it was read in all the churches.
Yeah, even though he was a deist, self-proclaimed deist even. Right. Yeah.
Well, right. They claim he was a deist, but that was read in all the churches,
mm-hmm.
and it heavily quoted Scripture.
Right.
Well,
right.
His concept of natural rights would have to come from Scripture, wouldn't it?
There was a noise. Say that again.
I said his concept of natural rights would have to come from Scripture. Where else could it have come from? It certainly
The natural rights of man were seen, and I covered this before when I talked about George Mason, they were seen as coming from Scripture. And not only that, but if you didn't believe they came from Scripture, then you don't have them.
Right.
If they didn't come from God, they don't exist.
Right.
You can't claim them.
Right. And, of course, today, and your point on your previous show is well taken, that we have to decide between the law of government and the law of Yahweh.
Absolutely. Who is our God?
Who is our God? Right. And
when you look for the government to solve your problems, the government is your God.
That's right. That's right. He mentions a couple of other pastors' names. He says, these patriot preachers were staunchly patriotic, seriously independent, and, of course, independent Christians, right? We're talking about Christian identity. You know, we're the ones carrying on this tradition, not the established churches.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, they wanted nothing to do with the rituals and all that garbage that the Romish Church invented as a substitute for true Christianity.
And the to
perpetuate the old Roman pagan priesthood.
Right, and the Anglican Church was continuing those traditions. You know,
yes,
not
they
a by form, you know, but they were continuing those traditions. Yes.
So did the Lutherans.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
That they still have Mass. They still call it Mass, and they still have those traditions.
Yeah, they may not teach transubstantiation, but they still have, you know, they still have that form of it, right? And he continues to say here, they were found in almost all of the various Protestant denominations at the time, Baptist, Presbyterian, Congregational, Anglican, Lutheran, German Reformed, etc. Their Sunday sermons, more than Patrick Henry's oratory, Sam Adams and James Warren's Committees of Correspondence, or Thomas Paine's Summer Soldiers and Sunshine Patriots, inspired, educated, and motivated the colonists to resist the tyranny of the British crown and fight for their freedom and independence. So what has happened to the churches? They've sided with the
enemy. The IRS 501c3 tax exemption.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't teach the right thing, their tax exemption gets yanked. Mm-hmm. You know, the glaring example is Bob Jones University, right? I mean, they forbid race mixing on campus. They outrightly forbid interracial dating on campus.
Okay.
And when George Bush was campaigning, I think it may have been his second election bid. I don't quite remember. I think it was his second. When he was campaigning for reelection, he stopped and gave a speech at Bob Jones University.
Uh-huh.
And there was a public outcry in the Jewish media that George Bush was speaking at this racist institution.
Right.
And Bob Jones University rolled over and licked their, like a dog, right?
Right.
They rolled over and they caved in and lifted their ban on interracial dating on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened was they had never had an IRS 501c3 tax exemption because of their so-called racial discrimination.
Right.
They had it a year later.
Mm-hmm.
It was announced in the papers. It was announced, and I read it in the Wall Street Journal. They had it a year late.
Yeah.
They lifted the ban because of the public outcry of the Jewish media.
Yes.
And I think George Bush probably went there and spoke knowing what the result would be.
Sure.
so that the Christian right and the religious right would be on his side, but he knew it would cause an uproar.
Yeah.
And it did, and Bob Jones University caved to the Jewish media, and they got their tax exemption the next year.
Yeah.
The 501c3 designation also dictate what they can and can't preach a sermon about. For instance, I don't believe I've ever heard of any mainstream church that's 501c3 preaching against pornography, because that's part of the 501c3 agreement, isn't it?
Well, I haven't actually read the entire agreement. I've read things that were in it, but it's evil. It's evil. It's a subscription to the government religion.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what the First Amendment was designed to avoid. And here we have it, okay? And so, you know, now they're promoting race mixing, they're promoting homosexuality, they're promoting every single abomination that the Bible forbids. They call themselves Christian. Is there any doubt that this is the great whore that organized religion today is the great whore of the book of Revelation?
Well, it's certainly a huge part of it. There's
yeah.
no doubt.
Yeah, the great whore. They're encouraging race mixing. They're encouraging every single form of fornication and abomination under the sun, under the pretext of Christianity. Look what has happened to the churches since the days of the Revolution. You know, we can't blame today's decline in morality and decline in justice and decline in standards on the Constitution, as certain members of, you know, even in Christian Identity want to imply. If the churches had been true to their calling, and if the states had been true to their constitutions, none of this would be happening today.
Oh, I found a quote online by Steve Nestor, IRS Senior Revenue Officer. I am not the only IRS employee who's wondered why churches go to the government and seek permission to be exempted from a tax they didn't owe to begin with and seek a tax-deductible status that they've always had anyway. Many of us have marveled at how church leaders want to be regulated and controlled by an agency of government that most Americans have prayed would just get out of their lives. Churches are in an amazingly unique position, but they don't seem to know or appreciate the implications of what it would mean to be free of government control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it is a hypocritical situation. The churches don't have to pay taxes on gifts. You don't have to pay taxes on money that you were given.
Mm-hmm.
That's the law.
Mm-hmm.
You don't pay taxes on money you were given. An individual can give you up to, last year it was $10,000, and it's going to be $12,000 soon, right? And you don't have to even claim it or pay taxes on it. Now, 10 individuals can give you $10,000. You don't have to pay taxes on that money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the churches want is they want more money. So they want the people who give them money to be able to deduct it from their taxes.
Right.
If you give me money, I don't have to claim it, but you cannot technically deduct it because I don't have that IRS 501c3 designation.
Right.
That's the key.
Mm-hmm.
And if they advertise that people can deduct the money given away from their taxes, they don't have to pay taxes on that money, well, then they hope to get more money than they normally would have gotten.
Yeah, that's Satan's hook.
Can I go ahead and read? I found the 29 points 501c3 churches have to be in compliance with.
Okay.
There are 29 points. This is as of 1998. 1, be incorporated. 2, have a recognized creed and IRS-approved worship. 3,
IRS-approved worship.
And distinct ecclesiastical government, a hierarchical government. 4, have an IRS-approved code of doctrine and discipline. 5, be a denomination with a distinct religious history. 6, have ordained ministers. 7, ministers must be educated in a state-accredited college. 8, neutrality on political issues. 9, tax-exempt status issued by IRS. 10, pay a tax to the IRS for tax-exempt status, yearly fees. 11, be engaged in activities furthering exclusively public purposes. 12, open services to the public. 13, pastors must answer to the IRS as to the daily activities of the church. 14, the IRS is to be privy to all financial transactions, including sources, donors, expenditures, and if cash is used, the leadership will be likely suspect of money laundering. 15, have books and records available to the IRS at all times. 16, have the pastor inform IRS of the names of all donors. 17, file Form 1099 for gifts to missionaries and evangelists over $600. 18, use only IRS-approved methods of fundraising. 19, have the pastor be accountable to the IRS over stands taken against the tax system 501c3, requiring the church to support the IRS, which is why ministers knowingly or unknowingly always say to pay one's taxes. 20, submit names of all church workers, pastors, teachers, clerks, counselors, educational directors, office help, associates, and maintenance personnel. 21, give unlimited submission to civil magistrate pertaining to all laws, federal, state, and local, including public policy. 22, advocate and promote racial integration, offering no opposition to racial integration. 23, do not publicly oppose licensing of church ministries. 24, total abstaining from engaging in any activities opposing pornography. 25, not to support legislation saying that children belong to the parents and not to the state. 26, not to form a political action committee nor activity supporting legislation opposing lotteries and gambling activities. Although they pay bingo in church anyway, so what's it matter?
Right.
27, not to advocate support of the United States of America or state constitutions as the supreme law of the land. Public policy takes precedence. 28, not to actively participate in opposing the public school system. 29, not to publicly declare that the church is to obey God rather than the government.
Well, it's 29 carrots that the Jews hung in front of the Christian churches in order that they promote the religion of the Jews.
Right. That's right.
Well, which is secular humanism and everything that goes with that.
Yeah, and notice everything that the IRS wants the churches to promote is totally opposed to the Constitution.
They're basically Soviet churches.
That's right.
It's not only totally opposed to the Constitution, it's totally opposed to all of the basic precepts of Christianity.
That's right. Absolutely.
They're whores. There's no doubt.
Mm-hmm. The church might as well close then if they're going to be a 501c3 organization.
Yeah, they can't preach Christianity under all those terms. There's no way. Yeah. Here, let me continue. That's a very good list. And I think most people, I've never heard all those conditions. And it's amazing that there's just so many and how anti-Christian they all are.
And that was prepared by Richard Hoskins in the Hoskins Report.
Oh, okay. Richard Kelly Hoskins. Very good. Very good.
You know Richard Hoskins?
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, I met him in 96. But he's a Christian identity minister, but he's retired. So he's not doing interviews anymore. But let me continue with this article here by Chuck Baldwin. When General George Washington asked Lutheran pastor John Peter Muhlenberg to raise a regiment of volunteers, Muhlenberg gladly agreed. Before marching off to join Washington's army, he delivered a powerful sermon from Ecclesiastes 3:1-8. Maybe one of you guys can look that up and see what it says here. And it concluded with these words, "The Bible tells us there is a time for all things, and there is a time to preach and a time to pray." Oh, I know which verse it is now. "But the time for me to preach has passed away, and there is a time to fight, and that time has come now. Now is the time to fight. Call for recruits, sound the drums," unquote.
Well, they knew that a taxation, when you have no voice in the government, means that you're a slave.
Right.
It's that simple. That's the bottom line. Why should Christians enslave themselves? Christians are told to cherish their freedom. Paul says, if you're a slave, you're a slave. If you have a way to get free, to use it. Why should we subject ourselves to slavery when we're Christian children of God and we should be slaves of no man?
That's right. That's right.
And for us to just voluntarily roll over and offer to be slaves, how do we serve God and mammon? We can't serve two masters.
Yes.
We can't keep a tyrannical king happy and please Yahweh. And right now we're in that same position again because we are enslaved to this tyrannical Edomite-controlled government. Ever since 1913, we are slaves. Our forebears have allowed us to lapse into the slavery that the founding fathers of this nation would not stand for.
And doesn't that confirm the biblical quotation that the love of money is the root of all evil?
Well, absolutely.
Here the Jew is using money and the want of more money, okay, to entice these churches to file under 501c3.
And we refuse to fight for our freedom, so therefore, we don't merit any.
Yeah, that's right.
Servants to sin.
Mm-hmm. If you worship money and or government and or the Jew, then you don't deserve your freedom. That's the lesson. And too few of our people are learning this lesson. You know, they've allowed themselves to be enslaved.
They think they're free.
Yeah.
They think they're free. They give half their pay in taxes.
Right.
And think they're free.
That's right.
They might as well spend half the year working on a government farm for no pay.
Yeah, or a kibbutz in the Israeli state, right? Or, you know, for the type of Christianity they're preaching, they're not being true to any part of the Bible. Not to any part of the Bible. Yes, continue here. Then Muhlenberg took off his clerical robe after preaching the sermon to reveal the uniform of a Virginia colonel. Grabbing his musket from behind the pulpit, he donned his colonel's hat and marched off to war. As he did, more than 300 of his male congregants followed him. That's the real militia, folks. It's not the Jewish warmongers that we have today.
Today, his congregants would be calling the FBI and the ATF.
That's right. Exactly. They're totally opposed to everything the American Revolution is about, and they're totally opposed to everything the Bible's about. So all of these prophecies in both the Old and New Testament, that our people would become whores for other gods, have come totally true.
It seems today that the pastor would say, oh, I can't rise up. I have a family. I have to think of them.
Right.
Well, they'd rather their family live as slaves than risk their family. And if you think about it, all the founders, they had families. They had farms. Most of them lost their farms. They were burned to the ground.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Now that's, you know, you mentioned the real militia, and George Mason wrote for the state of Virginia that a well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people trained to arms is the proper, natural, and safe defense of a free state, that standing armies in time of peace should be avoided as dangerous to liberty. And today we have an FBI, an IRS agents, Treasury agents, the BATF agents, and all these agencies that they like to call police,
right.
They are really a standing army, and that they have absolutely violated our liberty.
Right. Right.
And we cave to it. We vacillate to it. We allow that to happen.
How about the 3,000 police officers of the U.S. Postal Service? That's right, they're postal police.
Right.
Well, right. And they're not police. They're a standing army defending the tyranny.
Right. That's right.
That most of the arrests and investigations they perform are political. But look at, I mean, I can't support the people. I don't support the imperialistic wars, but I don't support the Bolshevik anti-war crowd because most of them are extreme left-wing loonies.
Mm-hmm.
However, they just raided a whole bunch of anti-war, the homes of anti-war people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's political. That's a political operation.
Right.
That's not a criminal investigation by any means.
Well, it's interesting that the organized left, the organized left is much more organized than we are, okay? Because liberty.
They're financed by the bankers. We're not.
Right, exactly. They're originally organized by the Jewish bankers, but nevertheless, the rhetoric of the left accuses capitalism of all these crimes, and capitalism is the great evil of the left. And so ultimately, these leftists, without recognizing that it's the Jews behind all this capitalism, are taking their own rhetoric seriously. They created this monster. Now they have to get rid of this monster, don't they? So let them raid the homes of these leftists who are just dupes of the international bankers to begin with, okay? And while they're raiding their homes, maybe they'll leave us alone, right?
Well, right. And the last thing we need is conspiracy and organization anyway.
Right, because Yahweh is our protection.
Well, right. We either trust in God or trust in conspiracy and organization.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put my trust in Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Continuing here, Muhlenberg's brother quotes John Peter as saying, quote, "You may say that as a clergyman, nothing can excuse my conduct. I am a clergyman, it is true, but I am a member of society as well as the poorest layman, and my liberty is as dear to me as any man. I am called by my country to its defense. The cause is just and noble. Were I a bishop, I should obey without hesitation. And as far am I from thinking that I am wrong, I am convinced it is my duty so to do, a duty I owe to my God and my country." Okay, so here we have another preacher preaching liberty as well as the laws of the Bible, right?
And it's a Christian principle, and it's something I tried to stress when I talked about Hancock, when I talked about Mason, when I talked about Jefferson. All these men, a lot of them had a good deal of wealth, 20,000-acre estate in Virginia. I'd like to have 2 acres, right?
Yes.
All of these men sacrificed, they risked their wealth on behalf of their nation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the equivalent of giving your life for your brethren.
Mm-hmm.
They all gave their life for their brethren. Now, they prevailed.
Yes.
But they didn't know they were going to prevail. They believed they did because they believed that justice and God stood with them. And their faith helped them prevail. But it was still a great risk,
right,
of your estates and the wealth that your family has raised and your very life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The British wanted to hang Sam Adams and John Hancock.
That's right.
That's why they went to Lexington to hang these men. They would have hung them with no trial.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, you know, so
right
what
in
do
the
you
public square.
Right
in the Boston Market. I'm sorry.
Yeah, let me just put this question out there, and I think Pastor Dan is on the call too.
Yes, he somehow got muted, though.
The charge has been leveled that because many of our founding fathers were Freemasons, that they were, in fact, in league with the Jewish bankers, and therefore they're unwitting puppets. What do you make of that charge? You know, would these people sacrifice their lives against these Jewish bankers just so that the Freemasonry could prevail? Is that credible?
No, absolutely not. Freemasonry in 1776 was not what Freemasonry was in 1876 by any means.
Mm-hmm.
They were not. Some of these men were Freemasons, but they joined Freemasonry basically to get. And Franklin explains why in his letters.
Okay.
To establish business ties and community ties with other men.
Mm-hmm.
But when Franklin went to Philadelphia and he started his printing shop, well, you have to know people.
Right.
Yet you have to know people to get business. So what do? You look around at what kinds of associations and clubs and things like that there are. Well, he saw the Masons, and in the Masons he saw a way to establish business ties.
Right.
Most people that join the Masons, they still to this day think that's what they're doing.
Right. Right. The Masons themselves think that's what Masonry is about, but it's no longer about that because 30 degrees were added to the 3 degrees that existed then, and all those degrees were invented by the Rothschild Illuminati. Okay?
Well, right. And I'm sorry, I didn't comment on it, but last week on the Christaleos program, Victor Switzer, one of our brethren here,
uh-huh,
he did a pretty excellent program on what Masonry was from a former insider's perspective.
Okay.
And he wasn't any 32nd or 33rd degree Mason.
Right.
But he, you know, basically laid out what it was about from the common Mason's viewpoint.
Said he wasn't 32nd degree.
Oh, was he? Okay. But he wasn't 33rd. That's the key. But he laid that out, and it gained, you know, it was a good insight into Masonry, and I believe that, you know, my evaluation, I didn't really give it then, but my evaluation is that they use that as a training ground for prospecting men who they could persuade over to their side.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. That Masonry is more or less it's a sandbox, and they got all these kids in the sandbox, and they watching the sandbox can determine which kids are going to grow up to be like them.
Which are bullies with darts. Yeah.
Well, right, and pull them under their wing. Mm. But most people in Masonry have no idea of the things that Masonry has done over the years. However, in 1776, the Illuminati of Europe, the Bavarian Jesuits, had not yet infiltrated Masonry in America.
That's right. That's right. And, in fact, the American Masons were actively engaged in fighting the House of Rothschild and the Bank of England, which were primary instigators of infiltrating Freemasonry in Europe, okay? And that actually put a dent in their activities in Europe because they had to concentrate on fighting the American Freemasons.
Well, right. And what did we have with the French Revolution? Brian and I discussed it at great length. When the Freemasonry was basically responsible for pulling that revolution off to a great degree, and what did we have? The abolition of religion.
Right.
And what did we have in America? We had the exact opposite. In France, what do we have? We had basic anarchy and starvation. In America, we had wealth and plenty, and many of the founding fathers were openly against a central bank.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And actually, most of them were. But being presented with a huge debt from the Revolutionary War, they acceded to Alexander Hamilton's proposal to give the first bank of the United States a 20-year charter. Okay, and so even Washington reluctantly agreed, but they had to pay the debt somehow, and maybe they lacked they should have had more faith and allowed Yahweh to incrementally provide America with this prosperity, which was guaranteed by the fact that we no longer had to pay the British any taxes, right, or anything anymore. Okay, we were totally free of the British, but I think the French were demanding payment for supporting the Revolutionary War effort.
I don't know how Dan keeps getting muted. I'm sorry.
I had the same problem with Pastor Greg. I wasn't muting. Somebody else was. That was really strange. Okay.
Well, every time I look up, he has a red circle next to his name.
And you're trying to mute him. Yeah.
That's three times.
Yeah. That's weird. It's never happened to me before. And apparently it's happening to you now. Yeah. But let's talk about another revolutionary. Okay. Remember, too, it was Pastor Jonas Clark and his congregants at the Church of Lexington who comprised that initial body of brave colonists called Minutemen. These were the men, you will recall, who withstood British troops advancing on Concord to confiscate the colonists' firearms and arrest Sam Adams and John Hancock and fired the shot heard round the world. So here's another Christian pastor who believed in the rule of law, Yahweh's law. Okay? And, none of these men gave their lives on behalf of Freemasonry.
And certainly, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, and certainly not on behalf of Illuminized Freemasonry. They gave their lives on behalf of Yahshua Messiah.
Well, I really believe that the Jew loves to flood the right-wing forums and to flood Christian identity and other like-minded peoples with false conspiracy theories.
Right.
And Paul bashing is preeminent among them. Hitler was a Jew. Freemasons did the revolution.
Jesus
Abraham
was a Jew.
Abraham Lincoln was a Negro and a million other false conspiracies, and our people just go swallowing the bait and chasing after them. And three or four Jewish websites And before you know it, we have a Russell Walker.
Right, right. And a lot of people in identity spouting off the same rhetoric that some Jew invented. Now, there's conspiracy theories that are about the Jews, but then there's conspiracy theories that the Jews contrive against our heroes, right?
Well, right. And then, as Dan from Georgia says, another effect that it has is that it discredits the real conspiracy theories that do work in history and that are real.
Right, and make us all look like kooks.
Well, I like the Jewish financing of Bolshevism.
Right.
Which can be proven.
Yes. Well, which can be proven from documentary evidence.
Yeah, and by their own admission. Yeah, in various documents in the 20s, the teens, 20s, and 30s, where the Jews were bragging about financing.
It was public knowledge that Jacob Schiff and Kuhn Loeb and Company were financing communism, and that pretty much people knew it back then, since it was widely known.
Yes, it
was. The information was out there.
Yeah. But people didn't understand what Bolshevism was at the time because they weren't aware of the wholesale genocide that was going on in Russia being committed by the Bolsheviks.
But if one Jew gets taken prisoner or captive in the West Bank, the whole world hears about it.
That's right. That's right. And then the same thing, too. These rabbis in Israel burned a bunch of New Testaments last week. Where's the story? It's not in the mainstream media. Okay?
So, well, what about the Jewish tourists on the Iraqi border, on the Iranian border?
Right.
They were just mountain climbers, right?
Right.
I guess they just woke up one day and said, hey, it's a good idea to go hiking on the border with Iran.
Yeah.
Let's hop on a plane and go there.
Yeah. And there's a thriving Jewish community in Iran that the Iranian government does. They don't persecute or prosecute these people.
And those are all probable Mossad agents.
Could be. Right. So the Iranian government is far more tolerant than the Israeli government, given that fact, you know.
Well, rabbis burning New Testaments, that's the power of – if that alone should demonstrate the power of the Jews over the American media.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And there are many singular cases just like that one that never hit the media that should demonstrate the power of the Jews over the Jewish over the American media.
That's right. That's right. And then, even this CNN announcer, I guess he was Cuban-American, that recently turned against his Jewish bosses at CNN and accused Jews of being bigots.
He said that they're not a persecuted minority and they don't know what it's like.
Right, they aren't.
And they fired him later that day, didn't they?
That's right. They fired him the same day, and now he has crawled back on his hands and knees and apologized. Okay? Just like who's the actor who did the same thing about 20 years ago? The washed-up actor who played in the Racketeer movies. I can't think of his name. So it shows you how far away I am from that atmosphere, right? And they control Hollywood too. You can't criticize the Jews in Hollywood unless you're a Jew. If you're Jewish, you can criticize other Jews. But if you're non-Jewish, you know, your career is ruined. That's how it works. Okay, but they allow Jews to say things like that, just to convey the impression that they are tolerant, right? They're tolerant of other Jews who may disagree with them and say controversial things, but they're not tolerant of Christians saying exactly those same things. That's not tolerated. Continuing here with this Baldwin article, Caldwell, again, Pastor James Caldwell, who was the founder of the Minutemen. Pastor Jonas Clark. This is another paragraph. The supreme knight and great martyr of Presbyterianism was Pastor James Caldwell of the Presbyterian Church of Elizabethtown, present-day Elizabeth, New Jersey. He was called the rebel high priest and the fighting chaplain. He is most famous for the story of Give 'em Watts. It is said that at the Springfield engagement, when the militia ran out of wadding for their muskets, Parson Caldwell galloped to the Presbyterian Church and returned with an armload of hymn books. threw them to the ground and exclaimed, "Now, boys, give them wads, give them wads." In other words, they tear pages and wad them up and use them for wadding, a reference to the famous hymn writer Isaac Watts. Caldwell so angered British commanders that they made martyrs of both him and his wife. General Kniphausen's expedition took Elizabethtown in 1780, burning Caldwell's church and shooting his wife. Later, Caldwell himself was shot. Source: Humphrey, Nationalism and Religion in America. So is there any doubt that the pastors of the American Revolution were the exact opposite of what we're finding today in the whore, the church whore priesthood of 501c3 Judeo-Christianity?
Well, absolutely. And they're probably also the exact opposite of the things that Glenn Beck espouses.
Mm.
And Glenn Beck is trying to co-opt the name now.
Right. Oh, he was using this terminology too? The Black
yes.
Regiment? Okay.
The Black Robe Regiment. Yes, Glenn Beck has co-opted it. He's co-opted it several months ago, and it's all over the Internet.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, and so, yeah, and then he worships Martin Luther King, right? So, yeah, combining, you know, the exact opposite of the Founding Fathers, who were Christian separatists, white separatists, with, you know, and our current holiday season doesn't name any of our individual Founding Father presidents, does it?
No, they took one away to, that they combined Washington and Lincoln's birthdays, I think, to make room for the communist Negro plagiarizer.
That's right.
I won't give him the respect of mentioning his name.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just generic President's Day. So now George Washington and Jefferson have to share a day with the likes of Wilson and Rosenfeld.
Right. Yeah, well, that's what we've got now. We've got a generic president, the universal brown man, promoted by the United Nations organization, another Jewish front. Okay? So their global control of our thinking, their global control of our thought processes, the daily media, the religious material we get, is absolutely in their hands.
Well, they're able to do it because the average American reads no books.
Right.
He gets everything that he thinks he knows after high school from, and everything that he knew during high school from the same corporations that produce CNN and Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
And all the drivel of his mind comes from the same Jewish-controlled mainstream media, whether he learned it in a Simon and Schuster textbook,
right,
or off of any program on CNN.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's the same Jewish drivel.
Yes, yeah. Or from the ADL publication notices. It's all the same source, right? It's all the same source. And our people have been deceived. The whole world has been deceived, just as the scriptures say. And that includes all those Christians who think they're saved because they're not saved. They're actually following the Antichrist, and he's leading them to perdition, and they are chanting his praises in the name of Christ.
Now, this is a good website. It's basically another recap of these pastors. Most Christian pastors today appear to have little in common with the preachers of times past. Isn't that the truth? Today, they're clinical psychologists. They're not pastors.
Right.
They know clinical psychology and business accounting, right? King George had provoked many of these men to leave England by demanding that they submit to licensing. State-run churches, today's IRS churches,
mm-hmm.
by the crown. But they submitted to no man save God only. More than attire sets these preachers apart. They had backbone. They had a fire loosed within them that could not be put out by being threatened by loss of property, imprisonment, or even death. The Black Regiment was composed of men of various Christian denominations who courageously championed the cause of liberty and independence, and who preached fervently and faithfully the message of redemption and biblical sovereignty and authority.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike most pastors today, they were untouchable and relentless in the fight for human liberties, freedoms, and God-given rights. Preachers of the Black Robe Regiments were found among Baptists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, German Reformed, Lutheran, Congregationalists, and others. They were young and old, loud and soft-spoken, rough and gentle, and urban and rural. They differed on secondary doctrines and never surrendered their theological distinctions. Although different in many regards, they all believed in the same biblical truth, that man is created in the image of God and given inalienable rights of freedom and independence, precious gifts of God, not to be trampled underfoot by men. Mm. And human authority was limited and particular. And let me see that a little more English history has to be understood to understand the cries for freedom from tyranny in the American Revolution. Because at the Restoration under Charles II, that there was an English constitution and the parliament formed, and England became a parliamentary democracy under a monarch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hybrid English government that we have to this day. And that constitution, that English constitution, demanded that the people have a voice in government. Well, when all of the colonists came over here during the 17th century, they came over here as free Englishmen.
Right.
And they had a voice in their local government here, and they paid a tax to the colonial authority to administer the government here.
Mm-hmm.
But they never had to pay money to England because they had no voice in the English Parliament.
Right.
These were free Englishmen. When you want money from me and you're giving me nothing for it, I'm your slave.
That's right.
It's very simple. And the king demanded money. This French and Indian War was fought. It wasn't for the benefit of these colonists. Their territory was secured. It was so that the British could make a conquest of Canada,
mm-hmm.
for the most part,
sure.
and the lands of the North and Northwest. That's why they fought the French, and that's why that's how they gained control of New Brunswick and Quebec. The people of Massachusetts, they didn't profit from that. Only the bankers in Britain would stand to profit from that.
Right.
So as far as taxes go, didn't you know you receive useful benefits such as roads and police and other things you didn't ask for?
well, right, but that's here in this country, and we're talking about a tax being sent to the king in England to win a war in Canada. And that's what this tax on the colonists was about. And they weren't going to stand for it. They weren't going to stand on paying a tax to a government. They had no voice, and no legislative voice in that government, and they certainly had nothing to gain by the French and Indian War.
Right, right. Yeah, and in addition, Americans who had traveled back to Britain observed the horrible conditions that the vast majority of British people were living. They were living in poverty. They were living in slums, in filth, okay? The Industrial Revolution in Britain exploited the workers to a horrible extent. Just the miners, even today, are still complaining about the horrible working conditions. And that was fomented by the bankers who were exploiting
workers. British land was all owned by the lords, and you either made yourself a slave to a lord, or you flocked to the cities and made yourself a craftsman if you could,
mm-hmm.
or an apprentice, or And with the Industrial Revolution, there wasn't much choice because the craftsmen were going by the wayside, and industrial monopolies were springing up, and you made you became a slave to the Jewish capitalists in the city,
right.
and America was a refuge for freedom. People could come here and make their own way and be independent and self-reliant.
Right.
That's gone today. I mean, there's no frontier where I can just move on out, clear the land, and stake a claim.
Mm-hmm. No, not anymore. No.
In fact, the government's probably the largest landowner in this country, and it was never meant to be so, was it?
Right.
Well, no, it was never meant to be so. What we had, we should all, at every one of the posterity of the founding fathers, let me put it that way, should have his right to his piece of land. to his 40 acres or whatever it was. They were giving away 40-acre plots in the 1800s, right, to entice people to move west and populate the continent.
The homesteaders, they got, 160 acres that they lived there for several years and improved the land with a dwelling.
Well, yeah, there were different laws at different times on how much land they would get. But, yes, they got to keep that land if they stayed and developed it.
But now the mestizos can just come here and they can get your house as long as they agree to stay here. And, of course, they're going to agree with those terms.
Yeah, right, because they're going to work for the Jew for $5 an hour and be good slaves.
Yeah,
and you have to pay for their Section 8 housing.
Yeah, we're paying for all of our punishments. That's what's happening. And, of course, no American would want to move to Mexico and take advantage of the great civilization they have down there, right?
And certainly, well, because we forgot our God, we forgot our inalienable rights. People imagine that these rights today, the average person believes these rights come from the government. Mm-hmm. They don't come from the government. If the government gives you something, the government can take it away.
Right.
If you receive something from God, no man can take it away.
That's right. That's right.
And we deserve our punishment because we forgot our God.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Another minister he talks about here, again, this is Chuck Baldwin's article on resurrecting the Black Regiment. Then there was the Baptist Joab Houghton of New Jersey. Houghton was in the Hopewell Baptist Meeting House at worship when he received the first information of Concord and Lexington and of the retreat of the British to Boston with heavy losses. His great-grandson gave the following eloquent description of the way he treated the tidings. Stilling the breathless messenger, he sat quietly through the services, and when they were ended, he passed out and mounting the great stone, he passed outside probably is what he means, and mounting the great stone block in front of the meeting house, he beckoned to the people to stop. Men and women paused to hear, curious to know what so unusual a sequel to the service of the day could mean. At the first words, a silence, stern as death, fell over all. The Sabbath quiet of the hour and the place was deepened into a terrible solemnity. He told them all the story of the cowardly murder at Lexington by the royal troops, the heroic vengeance following hard upon it, the retreat of Percy, the gathering of the children of the pilgrims round the beleaguered hills of Boston. Then, pausing and looking over the silent throng, he said slowly, "Men of New Jersey, the Redcoats are murdering our brethren of New England. Who follows me to Boston?" And every man of that audience stepped out into line and answered, "I." There was not a coward nor a traitor in old Hopewell Baptist Meeting House that day. Can we see this happening today?
Today they denounce the pastor as an extremist, and they'd say that his kids should be taken away and he should be imprisoned.
Right. That's actually what they're doing. And the churches are behind the treason. The churches today have become traitors to the American Revolution. They have become traitors to the Bible. And they say, we're terrorists. That we're haters, right? It's amazing. It's utterly amazing. Didn't the Bible prophesy this, Bill? Aren't we living in the days of the lukewarm church of Laodicea?
Well, right. They're lukewarm and self-righteous.
That's right.
They're a self-justified people.
Yeah.
And they have no idea what justification is about. That justification is found in obedience to the laws of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That they'll rent porno flicks and swear they're saved.
Yes. And they're justified in their own eyes. And all they have to do to qualify for that justification is to believe in Jesus and race mix, right?
Absolutely.
That's all they have to do.
And R.P. Wake asks if Ted Pike is Jewish, and I'd have to say, yes, he may not be a genetic Jew, but he's certainly a Jew. I mean, he's in bed with the Zionist bastards. He thinks they can be converted, and they're God's chosen people.
Yes.
That we should minister to them.
Right. Yeah, and of course, that's a waste of time. And for 2,000 years, we've tried to minister to them, and look what the result is.
Well, Jesus Christ never tried to minister
to
them.
That's right. He never tried, nor should we. We're not supposed to. We're supposed to have nothing to do with those vipers, because every time we let them into our congregation, they pose as one of our own and proceed to infiltrate and destroy our congregation. That's what they do. I mean, how many times do we have to learn this lesson? You know, it's a historical lesson that our nations, our local congregations, including local churches, and there's places where Jews, and of course the Catholic Church in Spain is witness to this, where Jews pretend to be Catholics, ascend to the pulpit, ascend to the bishoprics, almost even ascending to the papacy. We've had a few Jewish popes, right? And then proceeding to subvert our life, our Christianity, our institutions to whatever extent possible, and enrich themselves thereby. The Murano Jew of Spain, okay, pretended to be a Catholic. Of course, that was two viper groups fighting it out amongst themselves, and real and white Christians, you know, getting caught in the conflict. As so often happens, we get caught in the middle between two opposing, in this case the Catholic Church was probably, you know, they were imitating the Pharisees in creating an unscriptural sect, okay? And so these two unscriptural sects, the Pharisees and the Catholics, had a war between themselves, and our people got caught in the middle. Just as our people are getting caught in the middle between the staged war between Islam and the West, between communism and capitalism. Another, Pastor McClanahan of Culpeper County, Virginia, who raised a military company of Baptists and served in the field both as a captain and a chaplain. Reverend David Barrow shouldered his musket and showed how fields were won. Not farmed, but one. Another Baptist, General Scriven, when ordered by a British officer to give up Sunbury near Savannah, sent back the answer, "Come and get it." Deacon Mills of the First Baptist Church of Philadelphia commanded skillfully 1,000 riflemen at the Battle of Long Island, and for his valor was made Brigadier General. Deacon Loxley of the same church commanded the artillery at the Battle of Germantown with the rank of colonel, from the book The People Called Baptists by McDaniel, published in 1925. And, of course, as Bill pointed out, a lot of our American revolutionaries were expatriate Britishers who were, you know, wanted to get away from the crummy society that the Jews had made of Britain at that time.
Well, right, and they came, but they came here as free Englishmen and expected to continue to be treated as free Englishmen by the crown.
Right, yeah. So apparently the crown, I think, here's my perception of what was going on then. The crown was allowing many of these disaffected people to leave. Because
they didn't want a revolution in England.
Well, yeah, probably that. Although I don't know if the people of Britain were hard pressed enough to revolt against the crown. That may have been, you know, really difficult for the British people at the time. Okay, but certainly they were disaffected enough to want to leave in great numbers, and that alleviated the overpopulation they had there. Got rid of probably many criminals as well, or people that were deemed criminals. Okay. And got rid of disaffected religious people. Okay, so I guess the same thing happened, you know, when they sent the prisoners off to Australia to get rid of a lot of disaffected people, alleviate the prison population, et cetera, okay.
Well, as Franklin explained, only about 80,000 people came here from England, but those 80,000 people rapidly grew into a million, and England benefited greatly from the trade that generated.
Okay.
Because they had a market for their manufactures.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so it alleviated their overproduction. Their overproduction problem.
It alleviated their population problem to a degree, but it alleviated their overproduction, and it gave them a great benefit in the reaping of harvests such as wood, lumber for building ships, pine tar for sealing ships. Yeah, you know, there was a huge pine tar business in the Hudson River Valley, And it was peopled and manned mostly by Dutch. But when England had taken over New York, they encouraged the Dutchmen to continue in the manufacture of pine tar so that England would have a steady supply of it for the shipbuilding industry.
Right.
Pine tar is very crucial to the preservation of wooden ships in the water.
Yes, yes.
You know, one thing I'm looking at the population increases, our population went up by no less than 20% every decade in the 19th century, most decades 34 to 35%, and it only started to slow in 1910, 1920, 1930, 1940, it only went up by 7.3%. That's because they opened the floodgates, a huge amount of non-whites started coming into the country, and white people started having less than optimistic outlooks about the future. They didn't want to have children in a country that was becoming increasingly dark. So we didn't need immigrants to maintain our population level. Our population was going up 30% every 10 years in the 19th century.
Yes. Well, when our people are prosperous, then we certainly don't need any immigrants of other races, right? We certainly don't need that. And the black claim that America was built on the backs of slaves picking cotton, well, that's nonsense. You know, only 1% of the landowners actually had plantations big enough to hire all these people, and the Jews were the ones selling them in the first place.
And there were just as many white men working the fields, usually for themselves.
Right, right. And those blacks had a better way of life here as slaves on the plantations than any of their cousins back in Africa, where they were lion meat and they were being sold into slavery by their own kings, so-called tribal chieftains, not just to the Americans, but to the Arabs, too, and to the Indians.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Negroes had a much better way of life as slaves on plantations than they do today in crack houses and prisons.
That's right. That's right. And because the government pays them to do nothing, they have a disposable income that they can throw away on destroying themselves, right?
Yeah. Well, that's
and
how they
blame
spend all,
that.
Their, all their spare time is destroying themselves.
Yeah,
and
our
own
society, right. And yet they still blame us for everything that's wrong.
I just ran the numbers. Had it not been for the immigration deluge, our population today would be 792 million approximately, and it would be almost all white people.
Mm-hmm.
And Madison, Grant, and Stoddard addressed the issue, too. Grant addressed it, showing how erroneous the idea was in 1920 that, oh, our nation would be falling apart. We'd have a labor shortage if it wasn't for opening the floodgates in 1890. He points out that our great population increases were in the mid-1800s and early 1800s. 35.9% increase from 1840 to 1850, then 35.6 from 1850 to 1860. So we didn't need immigrants from all those third world countries coming into our nation to sustain our labor force.
Right.
We were going up by 30% every 10 years. We were more than sustaining our country. We were expanding.
Not quickly enough once we started taking debt from the Jew. We had to expand more rapidly to make sure the debt was paid.
Right.
The interest on the debt was serviced.
That's right. That's right.
But when you have an economy that's based on usury, the economy has to grow and expand faster than the rate of the usury, or the banks are going to start to fail.
Right.
That's only natural. In fact, it's only a mathematical law that if your economy is not expanding faster than that rate of usury, your banks are going to start failing. So as soon as they started putting money into the economy that was usury-based money, that these people that had the monopoly on that had to ensure that their debt was going to be paid, their interest was going to be serviced, and they coerced the government into the floods of immigrants in order to keep the Ponzi scheme going.
That's right.
And since 1910, our population increase has never been above 20%. It's typically been around 8 to 15%, but before 1910, it was consistently 28 to 35%. So Native white Americans had fewer children because immigrants were coming in and crowding them out.
Right. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Well, absolutely. I mean, my great-great-grandmother had 18 children, and my great-grandmother only had 7, and only four of them lived to adulthood. My grandmother only had one. My mother had three, but my grandmother only had one.
Yeah, Laban's.
And my grandmother spent the war years working. She spent the war years working in a shoe factory. She probably couldn't have children, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, if you getting back to your economic point, if the let's say the usury rate is 10%, and all the businesses in the country are being financed by that, you know, that interest rate, then every single one of those companies has to produce 10% more to break even, right? They have to produce 10% more to break even before they can make a profit because they owe that 10% to the bankers, all right?
Well, right, absolutely.
So many of these companies are going to fail simply because how many businesses make a 10% profit with or without usury, okay? So many of these businesses are going to fail, but nevertheless, the bankers make their money.
And well, I know that the computer industry, the computer industry was operating on a 3% margin. Dell and Gateway and companies like that in the late 90s, it had become so fiercely competitive.
Right.
Their margins were like 3%. But the software companies, their margins are usually like 25 or better.
Okay.
Per se. It depends on the industry, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so if you're in a 3% margin business, you can't operate on borrowed money. You have to have capital to make that, you know, to make that 3%.
Well, I do know that most American corporations, and these are figures from the 90s, too, because I used to read the Wall Street Journal every day, right? But I haven't read it in a long time. I got tired of reading about the devil. I actually used to read it to keep track of the devil.
Right.
And it became too time-consuming, and I gave up on it. Well, most American corporations operate on debt that's equivalent, and these are 15-year-old statistics. It's probably worse now and not better. On debt that's equivalent to 85 to 90% of its stock value.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you're General Motors and you have $1 billion in stock out there on the market, that means you're probably carrying $850 million in debt.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go belly up, do the stockholders get anything? No, there's nothing left because bondholders by law always gets paid first.
Uh-huh, right.
The bankers always get their money first.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, we were told in law class in a bankruptcy, the first people paid are the accountants and the lawyers who handle the bankruptcy, and then immediately after they get paid for the work, then the bankers get paid, and then it just continues on down with preferred stock, and then if there's anything left, common stock.
Right.
Well, right. And the common stockholders never get a dime. It's extremely rare.
Mm-hmm.
A penny a share if they're lucky.
He said they're lucky to get fractions of a penny.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and now since the government is getting us into debt by borrowing money from the bankers constantly every day on a daily basis, we the people have shares of debt. Not shares of stock, but shares of debt.
And
it's going to work with
debt. And as you know, Henry Ford, the bankers hated Henry Ford because he would not borrow money
mm-hmm.
during the Depression. He would not borrow money from the Jew bankers.
Yeah.
He steadfastly refused to and found every way he could to keep his company going.
Yes.
Until his whore grandson sold right out.
Right.
They sold right out.
Well, that's difficult. Henry Ford was under extreme pressure, you know, Jewish pressure. To you know, both apologize for writing the International Jew, you know, for actually associating with Gerald L. K. Smith and Huey Long and people like that, you know, who were the natural enemies of the Jews. You know, Henry Ford was actually a Christian identist without people realizing it. You know, people don't realize he put a copy of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion on the back seat of every Model A Ford that came off the assembly line, right? So people were able to find out what the Jews were actually up to.
And he gave a copy to all of his employees. The Jews hated him for it.
Right. The Jews absolutely hated him. Right. But, you know, if it's one industrialist against the world empire of Mystery Babylon, and he's got no support from any politician or any church, you know, what's going to happen to him? you know, and of course his son didn't have the, you know, backbone that the father did. And yeah, as you said, Bill, he just caved right in. And Ford Motor Company is now another Jewish corporation, just like the rest of them. Continuing with this article by Baldwin here, these, you know, talking about these revolutionary pastors, these were not the acts of wild-eyed fanatics. I guess we would be wild-eyed fanatics in modern terms, you know, because we support the Constitution and the Bible, right?
Well, absolutely, we're considered fanatics.
Yeah.
Well, we're the anti-fanatics.
That's right.
And it's those people that worship John Hagee and Joel Osteen. They're the fanatics.
That's right.
They would call us the lunatic fringe.
Yeah, right. But that's all they can do is call us names. There's not one of those people who would dare to get on the air with any one of us and debate Scripture. Right? He says, these were not the acts of wild-eyed fanatics. They were the acts of men of deep and abiding faith and conviction. Their understanding of the principles of both natural and revealed law was so proficient, so thorough, and so sagacious that their conscience would let them do nothing else. Hear the wise counsel of the notable colonial preacher, Reverend Samuel West. Our obligation to promote the public good extends as much to the opposing of every exertion of arbitrary power that is injurious to the state as it does to the submitting to good and wholesome laws. No man, therefore, can be a good member of the community that is not as zealous to oppose tyranny as he is ready to obey magistracy. Okay? How many Christians sitting in the pews of today's churches would say anything like this?
Right. None of them are opposing the tyranny that's gone on in this country since the Wilson administration.
That's right.
Not one mainstream church that I've ever heard of is opposing this tyranny.
Yeah. And as you said, one ministry, Bob Jones, caved in to 501c3 after Bush paid them a visit, right? and certainly, even though we don't agree with the philosophy and teachings of David Koresh, the American people got a real taste of what this tyranny is all about.
If you don't have a government-approved doctrine, they'll burn your church down.
Right.
Well, it's like I brought up with John Hancock. He stood up to the unfair British taxes, and the English government confiscated one of his sloops, one of his boats, right, one of his ships.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire city of Boston was up in arms, and they ran the English tax collectors right out of town.
Right.
Now, what happens today when the government comes and confiscates your neighbor's car? People say, oh, I'm glad it wasn't my car.
Right.
That's all they say.
That's
right.
You're radical.
Yeah. That guy must be a terrorist. Good for the government.
They don't care one damn bit.
Right.
And that's, they don't. None of them deserve liberty because they refuse to stand up for anybody else's liberty.
That's right.
They hate
and
their
it's
brother.
Been going on for 100 years.
Yes.
They don't care as long as it doesn't bother them.
Yes.
They won't risk 1 cent or one hair on their heads for their brother's liberty. They don't deserve their own. They deserve to be the stinking slaves they are.
Right.
They deserve to be wallowing in the slime on ABC and NBC and eating from the Jewish trough that they suck down the swill from.
That's right. That's
right. Bill, I was thinking about Ruby Ridge and how people were shouting and holding up signs and yelling at the U.S. Marshals and the National Guard. Well, I would say if they'd have been true patriots, they'd have gone home, got their rifles, and there'd have been dozens or hundreds of people in the hills shooting at those U.S. Marshals and National Guardsmen and drive them away from Randy Weaver's cabin.
Right.
Well, there are no true patriots. There aren't none. Nobody wants to nobody. Even politically, this can be done politically if people sought righteousness. There's no political solution because nobody seeks righteousness. They only seek after their own bellies, period. If people really sought righteousness, they would start with their towns and they would take them back from the people that vacillate to government demands for oppression.
That might take away from football and American Idol, though.
Well, that's the problem, and that's why they'll never do it. They'd rather spend 2 hours on their asses in front of their television groveling at Britney Spears' belly button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's some major groveling. Right?
Well, it's sad, but that's the state of the average white American.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the concept of citizenship today is as shallow as the concept of Christianity in mainstream churches. You have all these so-called Christians who have succumbed to this gospel of personal salvation. Here we go. I, me, myself. All I'm concerned about is my salvation. And everybody else be damned. Okay? Whatever happened to citizenship, helping out your neighbor? Okay? Maybe some of these Christians do that, but that certainly is not what they're being taught by their ministers. They're being taught to look only to their own salvation, and that their salvation consists of going to heaven when they die.
The gospel of selfishness.
That's right.
And self-delusion.
That's right.
Well, I have a short paragraph from a document called The Religious Roots of the American Revolution and the Right to Bear Arms. The Americans knew that liberty was God's cause, but in order to defeat the tyrant, they had to purify themselves morally. Only if the Americans were repentant, sincere Christians, would have the moral right to resist their evil governors. If the Americans remained sinful, then the Americans would have to accept their evil governors as God's punishment. That perfectly reflects the declaration of prayer and fasting that John Hancock had issued in the 1780s. It was the same exact attitude. We're being oppressed by tyrants because we're a sinful people. Mm-hmm. We have to repent, and our God will remove the tyranny, or allow us to remove the tyranny,
yes,
from oppressing us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lesson in Romans chapter 13. That's the real key to political salvation. We have to repent.
Yes. Here's, I believe you made a couple of quotes from Alexis de Tocqueville. I don't know if you did this one or not, from Democracy in America. Quote, "Religion in America takes no direct part in the government of society, but it must nevertheless be regarded as the foremost of the political institutions of that country." Now, that sounds like a contradiction in terms, but that's only to say that the First Amendment did not ensconce a particular denomination,
sure,
as the state religion.
There's no tax-supported state church that calls,
exactly,
the shots, but all the people still believe in Christ and Scripture, and they live,
right,
decent lives.
Yes.
And like we learned, Thomas Paine's Common Sense was read in every pulpit.
Yes, yes. And since those Christians could not agree among themselves on every point of how the Bible is supposed to be interpreted, and neither do we, right? But we're not arguing for a state sponsored, state taxed, and your portion on James Madison, he did think it was right for the government to tax people to support some other man's version of Christianity, right?
Exactly. That was his entire argument.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, where are these people today?
They're 501c3, so they can't say anything about taxes today.
Right, right. So,
well, that's the thing. 501c3, it creatively depoliticized the churches.
Mm-hmm.
So that now they're forbidden to talk about the one thing above all that they should be talking about.
That's right.
How our communities are governed.
God and government, right. The real God and the real government, right. Instead of this counterfeit system that has been imposed by the children of the Antichrist. Yes. So let me start that sentence over, because it's such an important sentence to understand what he's meaning here. Religion in America takes no direct part in the government of the society. That is, organized establishment religion does not take part in the government of society, but it must nevertheless be regarded as the foremost of the political institutions of that country. For if it does not impart a taste for freedom, it facilitates the use of free institutions. Indeed, it is in the same point of view that the inhabitants of the United States themselves look upon religious belief. I am certain that they hold it to be indispensable to the maintenance of a republican institution. This opinion is not peculiar to a class of citizens or to a party, but it belongs to the whole of the nation. Okay, we want freedom of religion, we want freedom of speech, but to the extent that a state-subsidized denomination will relieve us of those two things, we want none of that, right? So all those people who accuse the Constitution of being anti-Christian because it didn't ensconce a particular denomination or Christianity in general in the Constitution, they just don't get it. They don't understand the historical context of the debate. I wouldn't want Ted Weiland's version of Christianity imposed upon me, much less Ted Pike's, right?
Oh, no, I can't have Ted Pike's I can't have any part of Ted Pike's Christianity.
Yeah, right.
He's a Jew.
A Jew worshiper. In spite of all the rhetoric he has against the evil Jews, he still teaches, well, these rabbis are the direct descendants of the house of Judah, and therefore we should worship them, and they will eventually convert to Christianity.
Well, that's not Christian.
No, it's not.
That entire outlook is not Christian. It's not based on the Bible.
No.
Yeah, you know, Christ makes it very clear in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 that those who rejected them are those who said they are Judah and are not.
Mm-hmm.
They're of the assembly of Satan.
That's right. And, of course, it's his type of denomination that totally disregards all statements in the Bible that excoriate the Jews and their religions. It's like those words in the four Gospels are filled with that kind of language, and as we've been finding out, all of the epistles, with very few exceptions, are filled with comments about these people who crept in unawares, pretending to be our brethren, and subverting all of our institutions, and our society, and our religion. It hasn't changed in the last 2,000 years. Okay, let's see here. Well, we've got about half an hour left, and let's see. It was. Let me continue with this article by Chuck Baldwin. This was the spirit of 1776. This was the preaching that built a free and independent nation. This is what colonial America had that, by and large, America does not have today. In the thinking and preaching of the Black Regiment, freedom and independence were precious gifts of God, not to be trampled underfoot by men. Human authority was limited and subject to proper divine parameters, and the mind of man was never to be enslaved by any master save Christ himself. Okay? So anybody who suggests that the founding fathers of this nation were not Christian simply has no idea what he's talking about. He's been believing Jewish propaganda, and the mere fact that the Constitution of the United States doesn't mention Christianity specifically is because the founding fathers could not bring it upon themselves to force others of different denominations to, you know, practice their version, and neither would they want that reverse situation imposed upon them.
Well, right, but the best argument I've seen, and I mentioned it today, was that Bayard fellow that I quoted from Delaware,
mm-hmm.
who said that religion could not be mentioned in the U.S. Constitution because it was an agreement between these sovereign states, and religion was not part of the agreement.
Right. Yeah, it was
that they weren't agreeing, that they wanted to avoid agreeing about religion because they knew that they could not.
Yes.
And the fruit of that is the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. And certainly none of us would want to agree with either Ted Weiland or Ted Pike about their religion. I would never want to live in a nation where I was forced to agree to their version of Christianity, right? Yahweh forbid. Yahweh absolutely forbid, okay?
Well, to me, Ted Weiland is 10 times more responsible for his sins than Ted Pike. Ted Pike is a Judeo-Christian minister that doesn't claim to know better.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Weiland claims to be Christian identity claims to know better, to know about the racial covenants of God with Israel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And still denies the existence of the enemies of God.
That's
Ken
right.
Wieland is twice the child of hell that right. any Jew is.
Yeah, he's a deceiver because he's soft on the Jewish message. Yeah, and that's recent, in the last 10 years. Before then, he used to actually use the word Jew. But I haven't heard that. And then I hear he sent some Bibles to Nigeria.
He sent Bibles to Nigeria. There's absolutely no excusing that.
Yeah, yeah. What would that accomplish?
It accomplishes absolutely nothing.
On his website, he says most of the Jews in Israel today are not true heirs of the covenant. Well, I don't know any Jew who's an heir of the covenant.
Right. None of them are. None of them are. They're Edomites and Khazars.
He says the Khazar Jews are not Abraham's descendants.
Yeah, well, neither are the
Edomites.
None
of them are, because the ones that actually do have a physical lineage from Abraham are bastards.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa.
Right, right. And so apparently, just like British Israel, he accepts half-breeds into the congregation. Well, what does Deuteronomy 23:2 say? No.
Well, right. A bastard will never enter the congregation of Yahweh, but neither will an Edomite.
That's right. Because we're not to make any covenants with them. Okay? I mean, if you allow them to move into your country and take over your country, you've made a covenant with them.
And you've lost your country.
And you've lost your country. Besides, yeah, yeah. And most of the time, our people don't even know it when their country's been stolen right from underneath our noses. Okay? Political Sermons of the Period of 1776. This is from a book entitled The Christian History of the Constitution of the United States, Christian Self-Government. New England has the proud distinction of tracing her origin to causes purely moral and intellectual, a fact which fixes the character of her founders and planters as elevated and refined, not the destroyers of cities, provinces, and empires, but the founders of civilization in America. As near the law of God as they can be, was the instruction of the general court to their committee of laity and ministry, appointed to frame laws for the Commonwealth. Their first written code, under the charter of 1629, was drawn by a minister. Thus, the church polity of New England begat like principles in the state. The pew and the pulpit had been educated to self-government. They were accustomed to consider. The highest glory of the American Revolution, said John Quincy Adams, was this. It connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government with the principles of Christianity. I mean, wow.
Well, absolutely. And we shouldn't have any non-Christian involved in our government.
That's right.
In the least degree. Mm-hmm. If you're not a Christian, you really have no business here at all.
That's
but
right.
You should certainly not be involved in our government.
That's right.
And much of the material that I read today fully demonstrated that.
Mm-hmm.
That they did not want Christians of the revolution, and nearly everybody was a Christian, except for the extreme minority of deists, did not want Mohammedans and Jews and other infidels and atheists involved in government.
Right.
And if they were around today, they'd be telling all these Odinists, you people aren't patriots, you're not nationalists, shut up and go back to prison.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And the prisons are a good example of how all this has completely turned around 180 degrees, because it's Christian identity which is the most oppressed religion in the prisons.
Well, it's the only religion that's a threat to the Jews.
That's right.
It's the only religion oppressed in the prisons.
Yes.
Nation of Islam, which is radical, which openly wants to kill all white people,
mm-hmm.
and that they are accepted in the prisons and are able to have their meetings and distribute their literature.
Yeah.
And Christian identity is oppressed in the prison system.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, many of my mailing lists who are in the prisons are constantly complaining that their mail is being tampered with and that they're being put in the hole simply for getting identity literature. And that doesn't
Well, I was put on hold for producing identity literature.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized they couldn't do anything to me and had to let me go.
Yeah.
But they tried to harass me over it, and they really probably cost me about 6 weeks on my release. I probably should have been home
mm-hmm.
by November 1st of 2008 rather than December 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And that's water under the bridge. I don't even care about that. But Christian identity, as far as I know, in a federal prison system, is the only oppressed religion.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I have 12 years in the system. I never heard of any other.
Right. Yeah, they recognize the pagan rituals of the Odinists and the Satru, and they let them do that stuff, you know. But if an identist gets a piece of literature that says the Jews aren't God's chosen people,
well,
okay.
It seems to me that the Jews are very oppressed in the prison system because they don't have 20 goyim waiting on them hand and foot.
Right, dude, they haven't got enough slaves yet.
Well, I have seen prison staff members, their indoctrination concerning Christian identity, it is so strong that I have seen them actually go berserk at the mention of Christian identity.
Uh-huh. Right. Right.
And this is lieutenants and captains. It's not and SIS officers. It's not rookies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have been so brainwashed against the truth that they actually hate themselves and hate. And you're talking about white people, right? You're not talking about blacks.
Well, white and black.
White and black. Yeah.
I had a black lieutenant standing in front of me, running around the room, waving his arms in the air, yelling at the top of his lungs that Jesus saves. Only because I told him that I was Christian identity.
Right. That's funny. I had a similar experience in Vietnam. It was a black sergeant, first sergeant of our company. And I suppose I disrespected him, but he gave me an illegal order. And he jumped out and ran around the room waving his arms.
So, Phil, what did you say to him when he's running around shouting, Jesus saves and Jesus loves? Did you say, yeah, just now
I just stood there with my arms crossed staring at him.
Yeah.
That's all I do.
Did he eventually go away, or did someone tell him to go away? Or
No, that's when I was thrown in the hole for producing identity literature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's all you're doing is translating the New Testament from the Greek, right? That's all you were doing.
Well, no. Somebody else got themselves into hot water and had a bunch of my pamphlets. Yeah, you know, the immigration problem and biblical prophecy and the historical pamphlets and some of my other essays.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah.
They recognized my name on the pamphlets, and that was it. That they called me in, and I had two Negro lieutenants and a white dyke captain. And they couldn't intimidate
Lucky
me.
You.
I was going to let.
Yes. Well, here's this idea that the founding fathers understood that they were Israelites in more than just a spiritual sense. It's very common in their sermons. Okay, and I quoted Isaiah and other Old Testament scriptures that Yahweh will preserve himself a remnant, okay? That's clear teaching from the scripture. And many of our founding fathers understood it couldn't be the Jews because they were lawbreakers, whether they were descended from the house of Judah or not, and probably many of them did believe that. They did understood the stand that the Jews were lawbreakers and had would have nothing to do with the Jews because they were breaking usury laws, they were breaking tyranny laws. They
break their own oaths.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the Kol Nidre. And it was common in the Middle Ages for Christians to be aware of the Kol Nidre. Okay? Very few Christians today are aware of the Kol Nidre at all.
Kol Nidre today, and someone thinks you're talking about some coffee flavor.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so this is a sermon by John Trumbull, Governor and Commander-in-Chief of the Honorable General Assembly of the State of Connecticut, convened at Hartford at the anniversary election of May 8th, 1783. Okay, and here's, he's quoting Deuteronomy 26, verse 9, and to make thee high above all nations which he hath made in praise and in name and in honor, and that thou mayest be an holy people unto the Lord thy God. So they consider the premise of this sermon. He was a white Christian, not a Jew. he understood that the holy people of God are us. He understood that, okay, disregarding any confusion about Jewish claims, right? Part of his sermon says this, but as well to comfort and support the righteous in every age and under every calamity, as to make his power known among all nations, God determined that a remnant should be saved. Not all people, a remnant. Whence Moses and the prophets, by divine direction, interspersed their writings with promises that when the ends of God's moral government should be answered in a series of national punishments, inflicted for a succession of ages, he would, by his irresistible power and sovereign grace, subdue the hearts of his people to a free, willing, joyful obedience, turn their captivity, recover and gather them from all the nations whither the Lord had scattered them in his fierce anger, bring them into the land which their fathers possessed, and multiply them above their fathers, and rejoice over them for good as he rejoiced over their fathers. Then the words of Moses, hitherto accomplished but in part, will be literally fulfilled. Now, he's taking this as a prophecy. When this branch of the posterity of Abraham shall be nationally collected and become a very distinguished and glorious people under the great Messiah, the Prince of Peace, he will then make them high above all nations which he hath made, in praise and in name and in honor, and they shall become a holy people unto Yahweh their God. Of course, he said Lord, not Yahweh. This sounds like identity to me. Understanding that we are that holy people.
Well, there were a lot of people in the revolutionary era and before that believed that we were the Israel of Scripture only because we fulfilled the prophecy of Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand the actual history of the Anglo-Saxon Celtic races, but they simply took the Bible at face value. If we did the works of the children of Abraham, we must be the children of Abraham.
That's right. It's just logical, isn't it?
Yes.
It's just logical, right. And that logic has departed from the brains of the average white person.
But if we fulfill all the scriptures, all the prophecies concerning the descendants of Jacob, then somebody should open their eyes and say, well, how could that be?
It must be let me
look at that in history and see how that is. And they would find identity.
Yeah, so, you know, and that's one of the pre-discussions we had, that many of these founding fathers were actually identists, because they were racial separatists, they believed in the law, and they honored Jesus Christ, okay?
They honored Christ, they loved his moral precepts, and that they rejected churchianity.
Yes, and that's
that
what
they
we do today.
well, right, exactly. They rejected the sects and the priests and the devices of the professional priesthood.
Okay, and here's another sermon by Phillips Payson, pastor of the church in Chelsea. He says this: the baneful effects of exorbitant wealth, the lust of power, and other evil passions are so inimical to a free, righteous government and find such an easy access to the human mind that it is difficult, if impossible, to keep up the spirit of good government unless the spirit of liberty prevails in the state. This spirit, like other generous growths of nature, flourishes best in its native soil. It has been engrafted at one time or another in various countries. In America, it shoots up and grows as in its natural soil. Recollecting our pious ancestors, the first settlers of the country, nor shall we look for ancestry beyond that period, and we may say in the most literal sense, we are children, not of the bondwoman, right, but of the free. Who's he talking about?
Well, that's a quote from Galatians.
Yeah, he's talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. not the Ishmaelites who are children of the bondwoman, right? It may hence well be expected that the exertions and effects of American liberty should be more vigorous and complete. The slavery of a people is generally founded in ignorance of some kind or another, and there are not wanting such facts as abundantly prove the human mind may be so sunk and debased through ignorance and its natural effects as even to adore its enslaver. I mean, does he know what's going on? And kiss its chains. Hence, knowledge and learning may well be considered as most essentially requisite to a free, righteous government. That's why we have public education run by the Jew, so that there is no education.
That was in the Communist Manifesto. It was one of their key planks.
Yeah, government education.
Public education.
Yes, yes.
So everyone's equally dumb.
That's right.
And equally brainwashed.
And equally oppressed. Yes, yes.
And that way the parents and the children don't really connect with each other, since the parents are away working in the Jewish slave factory for 8 to 10 hours a day, and the children are away getting brainwashed or
having sex
with their teachers.
Right, right. And it makes great stories on the nightly news, right? And keeps our people titillated, and it keeps their attention glued to the television set. But they don't perceive that it's the destruction of their own way of life that they're witnessing.
They don't care that little Johnny's learning anatomy hands-on from his 35-year-old teacher who's married with three children of her own.
Well, they're preaching sex education, right?
And that's what they mean. They're not talking about cracking open a textbook and saying, you know, there's some bad stuff out there. You shouldn't do these things because you could get syphilis. You could get this. You could ruin your life. They say, here's how you do it, and it's real fun, and blah, blah, blah. And then they hand you a how-to manual with positions. It's like the Kama Sutra.
Yes, right. Yeah, and of course, here we go again. It's all distortion and perversion of the original teachings on a gradual basis. It's taken 200 years for our Constitution to be totally turned upside down and to be interpreted to mean the exact opposite of what it says in the case of the First Amendment, right? In terms of freedom of religion. And the freedom of speech provision is denied to us in Christian Identity and to many white nationalists because we're telling the truth about who the real oppressor is.
Someone in the chat room said that they teach kids about using condoms. Well, they do more than that. In Massachusetts, there was a first grade class where a gay group came in. They handed out a how-to book on gay sex involving sodomy, anal-type sodomy, oral sodomy, you name it. It was in the book. And then they said it was an accident, that the book shouldn't have been handed out.
Right.
Well, the only accident is they got caught.
Right, exactly, exactly. And still, you know, the average Christian who has become a very, very passive citizen, so passive that he is not even to be considered a citizen anymore, okay, that they put up with this and turn the other cheek. Because that's what they believe turn the other cheek means.
And, you know, on career day in some school, I think I want to say it was on the East Coast or in a New England state, some guy came in, a career consultant. He told some 13-year-old girl that basically along the lines of, here's a rough paraphrase of what he said. He said, a girl with knockers like yours could make $300 or $400 a night as a stripper.
Right. Yeah, well, why go to school?
and the teacher allowed this guy to continue talking. I'd have just dragged the guy out of the room and said, "Leave this building. You're uninvited.
Yeah.
We invited you in. You're now uninvited."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. When I went to school, I had teachers. They talked about sex, and one of them, I think he put up a picture of what a reproductive organ suffering from gonorrhea like, and he said, "You think 60 seconds of fun is worth this?"
Right.
He said you can have this for the rest of your life.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I'm sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
He said he wasn't going to pull any punches. He wanted people to know that there are consequences. You know, that the serpent's out there saying, surely that you shall not die. The serpent's always out there saying, surely there are no consequences. But we know that if something goes up, it must come down. There's always consequences.
I just found this pretty good blog of all places at the English language section of Pravda.ru. And this
Pravda?
Is written by Pravda. And this is written by a guy named Henry Asta. I have no idea what his religious proclivities are or his race or anything, but I'd like to read these two paragraphs.
Okay.
The black-robed regiment of the American Revolution did not hesitate to attack the great political and social evils of the day. Unlike today's turncoats, who are masquerading as shepherds of Jesus Christ, who are derelict in their duties and responsible for the cultural breakdown of America that came about as a result of their preaching the watered-down version of the gospel of Jesus Christ. They have also trashed the legacy of religious freedom handed down by the founding fathers, and now they are walking down the annals of history hand-in-hand with Judas Iscariot as the greatest betrayers that ever lived. That's pretty good. As most churchgoers eat saints on Sundays and excrete devils from Monday to Saturday, they love to hide inside their temples of hypocrisy in order to have their ears tickled and their egos massaged by unscrupulous, self-glorified religious swindlers as they wait in vain for the rapture, which is only a ruse of greedy men used to mesmerize, control, and fleece those trying in vain to buy their way into heaven, while providing wicked men lurking in the shadows the opportunity to legalize more government-sponsored abominations, especially now that the wicked have been emboldened by their success in legalizing same-sex marriage. There is nothing to prevent these perverts from marrying near children as soon as they succeed in lowering the age of consent through NAMBLA, the North American Man Boy Love Association.
Yeah.
And I probably wish I had the time to read the rest of this.
I stumbled across a leftist forum today where they're arguing about consent age, and they said that consent age overrules and invalidates the free will of the child, and that if the child wants to experience sex with somebody who's 40 or 50, that's between the child and the 40 or 50-year-old, and the parent shouldn't have the right to.
Yeah, right. Have another candy bar. You want this, don't you? Have another candy bar.
Right.
Come on, I'll buy you a skateboard.
Right. Yeah.
Here's another good paragraph. Revivalist Charles G. Finney, was right on target when he said, if there is a decay of conscience, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the public press lacks moral discernment, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the church is degenerate and worldly, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the world loses interest in Christianity, the pulpit is responsible for it. If Satan rules in the halls of our legislation, the pulpit is responsible for it. If our politics become so corrupt that the very foundations of our government are ready to fall away, the pulpit is responsible for it. Because they compromised the gospel.
That's right.
Well,
they compromised the gospel to accommodate the enemies of the gospel.
That's right.
They're paid off by the enemies of the gospel, and they are the enemies of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeshua said, be not deceived. He said, watch out for those who are wolves dressed as sheep. Well, of course, the pulpit bastards today aren't going to tell us that because they are those wolves.
Right.
They want us to be deceived because they want to fatten up the sheep so they can have the greater meal.
Yes, yes. Well, the devil's not going to come dressed in a red devil suit with horns and a trident and a tail, right? He's going to impersonate a Christian. That's what he's going to do. And so few of our people still so many of our people still lack the awareness to see through the disguise.
Well, I mean, if the devil was 5'2", balding, and had a 8-inch hook nose, he'd be obvious to spot.
Right, right.
But now the devil
But they still can't spot him. Now they look at the 5'2", balding, 8-inch hook-nosed bastard, and they say, oh, there's one of God's chosen people.
Right.
Especially since he's gotten a nose job, though, and maybe he's 5'6", through interbreeding.
Yeah. They still can recognize the Jew when they see one, but they simply do not understand what a Jew is. They just don't understand because they believe the Jew's rhetoric and don't follow Yahshua's advice when he says, by their fruits shall you know them. So don't listen to their pretty words. Look at what they do. And I think the last question I had of you, Brian, at the last episode was, what good thing in the world can be attributed to the Jews? What good thing have they done in this world?
I'm still researching that.
Right. Okay. Well,
I'll get back to you in another 6 weeks and tell you that I'm still researching that.
Right. And when you write the book, it's going to be blank, right? Because there is nothing good that has come from Judaism or the Jewish people. Nothing.
I guess they've given us a standard by which we can measure evil. So now that we know what evil is, we can tell what good is. Good is the opposite of Jewry.
Yes. Yeah, we have to have some sort of standard by which to measure evil versus good, right? And the Jews are experts at providing examples of evil, from the most subtle to the most blatantly corrupt. They provide examples all the way down the line, you know, and it's the deceptivity, deceivableness.
And they deceive even each other.
That's right.
They're cutthroats.
That's right. They're cutthroats. When they can, they will take advantage of each other as well.
I have a contact in the Israeli army who told me that there were some colonels and generals in the Air Force that were tasked with replacing missiles, guidance systems, and warheads that were 10 and 20 years old, and they were starting to hit their shelf life and expire. And instead of replacing them, they just fudged through the paperwork, made it look like they'd been replaced, and they pocketed all the money.
Right.
So vampires living off of vampires.
That's right. That's right.
That doesn't last indefinitely. That's why they always have to escape to rich lands with rich people to leech off of them.
Right.
That's why, despite the fact that they say they hate the Palestinians, they're never going to kick out the 1 or 2 million Israeli Palestinians. They need them. They're the work.
That's right. That's right.
It's a puppet show. That whole thing is a puppet show. While everybody in the Western world watches what happens in Palestine, the Jews have totally taken over the Western world.
Right. That's right.
It's a puppet show, and
our
entire nation fell for it.
Right. Well, yeah, if the promise of Zionism were ever to be fulfilled, namely that all the Jews would move back to Palestine, why haven't they done so? Will they ever do so? No, they won't. Because, number one, Palestine is not their nation, and number two, they have no intention of moving back there. They can't live off
of
each other.
Yeah, you know, there's a hell of a lot more congressional seats here.
That's right. And America still has a little bit of money left for them to steal. But that's running out fast, and they're looking for greener pastures as we speak. But the whole world, you know, they're not as likely to steal from the Muslims because they don't have as much as we have, okay? So I think they'll probably go back to Europe and then decimate Europe once again, okay? And steal what's left in Europe, because they have pretty much stolen everything the American people have. And so it's time, folks, it's time for us to wake up and to just keep telling our Israelite brethren what's really happening and appeal to their conscience, saying, do you believe that God would allow these Palestinian people just be murdered indiscriminately by these so-called chosen ones? And that, you know, why don't you see all of the Jews corrupting our government? Don't you have eyes to see these things? Please open your eyes, okay? And be decent, be moral, be a human being, and have sympathy for people who are being murdered and oppressed by this mystery Babylon system. How can you live with yourself and not oppose these things? I'm hoping that Christians addressed that way, we'll have a conscience that can be seared. Okay. But apparently a lot of our people have no conscience left.
Well, and the pulpit is responsible for it.
That's
just
right.
Like Charles Finney said.
That's right. The pulpit is responsible. It's the Christian ministers. They're those damned priests.
When all you could do is profess Jesus and be saved and wait for the rapture.
Yeah,
you have no care for sin.
Yeah,
you have no care for the world being stolen from you. I mean, we could be raptured any minute.
You're going to be beamed away in 5 minutes.
Talk about a
absolutely.
What a
it's a total relinquishment, that theology. It's a total relinquishment of all earthly Christian responsibility.
Right.
They're abrogating all their duties and obligations.
Right. For a false promise, whether it's the rapture or whatever kind of salvation, easy salvation they believe in. It's a false promise. And they swallowed that false promise, hook, line, and sinker, and they consider themselves superior to the rest of us for believing that garbage.
I call them rapture heads, and the thing is, I've talked to the few of them, and they've explicitly said they don't care about what happens to the environment or what happens
right.
to the world or who gets elected, because they say that the rapture is going to happen at any minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the Secretary of the Interior under Ronald Reagan. I forget his name, but he was a crazy Pentecostal. He was tasked with protecting the environment. He said, we don't have to worry about pollution. The second coming and the rapture are at hand.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, weren't we tasked to be productive, decent stewards, taking care of what we have dominion over? We weren't tasked with polluting and wrecking the planet.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, gentlemen, I think we've done 12 hours. Okay. And my fast is going well. I'm still in good spirits. I'm getting a little hoarse, but 12 hours, another marathon has passed by, and we've done what we can to wake up the true Christians of this world. Thank Yahweh for providing us with the internet and the ability to reach people at very low cost, right? Because we don't have high printing budgets and high media advertising budgets. We have to rely on what's available to us and hope that people listening to us will share this information with their loved ones, their brethren, who need to hear it probably worse than the people listening, obviously, to this marathon. But, Bill, I understand you can take these six episodes, put them together in one package, okay, so that they can be downloaded. I know a lot of people have been contacting me about having a disc version of a lot of these shows that we do. You know, maybe we can do that in the future, so they can listen to these programs in their vehicles while they're driving, you know. And so maybe we'll get to that point where we can do that, you know. But right now the Internet is our primary vehicle for spreading the word, and praise Yahweh for that vehicle. Otherwise the darkness that pervades the gloom of this planet would be impenetrable, okay. So I thank you both and all of the people involved in doing this marathon today, Greg, Pastor Ken Gregg, and Randy Gray, and all the others who have participated. Thank you very much. Praise Yahweh and for the salvation of his remnants, which is going to be on this earth. It's not pie in the sky, by and by. It's the salvation of our people that the gospel teaches, and apparently our founding fathers understood that just as much, maybe not quite to the extent that we do, because they weren't two C-line identists, but they did understand that there was a remnant of Yahweh who obeys his law and is here to establish his kingdom. Right? That's not what the...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.
Absolutely. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Thank you all for listening. I think on this note we can conclude our 10-10-10 marathon, and then we will be preparing fairly soon for our 11-11-11 marathon next year. We'll see how much of society is left by that date, right? It'll be very fascinating to find out.
Well, right, but let's not rush off. What are we doing Friday? Are we doing the James or John? One John?
Well, Friday we'll still be doing Ezekiel.
I'm sorry, Saturday.
Saturday. We did Jude, right? Yeah, you wanted to do James, so let's do James.
Okay, we'll do James Saturday.
Okay,
That'll probably take 2 weeks, and then John.
Yes.
And Ezekiel 38 Saturday, and
okay.
Friday. And Brian and I think, will pick up the Mein Kampf series on communism in Germany on next Sunday.
Outstanding.
Yes, next Sunday works well for me.
Okay,
wonderful.
All right.
Praise Yahweh.
Very good. Praise Yahweh. Thank you all for listening. Yahweh bless everybody.
I'll be on my open forum at ChrisTheGunning.net tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. Thank you and good night.